Good day, everyone. Welcome to CSU Relentless Gardener Podcast. I am Colorado State University Extension Horticultural Specialist Linda Langelo, and joining me today is Ross Shrigley, Executive Director of Plant Select. Now, let's get to the heart of it, where we explore the topic of Plant Select and all the research and fun things that you're doing. Hello, Ross.
Hello. Thanks for having me, Linda. This is exciting.
It is. It's a pleasure. So for those in the listening audience that haven't heard of Plant Select, and I can't imagine that there are any of those people, but if there are, explain what it's all about.
Well, in a nutshell, we've been around since 1997. And the reason that it was born was really because in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, people were moving into Colorado and they were going and purchasing plants that they thought would live out here. They were the same plants that they were used to from wherever they were from, out on the East Coast or the West Coast. And there was a lot of failures. And then we had people at Denver Botanic Gardens, where you have collections of plants from all over the world. And they're looking at these plants going, gosh, we should be using some of these. And then we had CSU saying we need to have studies showing which plants are the best for these areas. And so Denver Botanic Gardens and Colorado State University collaborated to introduce a program called Plant Select. And what that program is designed to do is to trial new plants and introduce them to the market. So there's two partners, CSU and Denver Botanic Gardens, but there's a third collaboration that gets overlooked in my mind, and that is the green industry. Because you can tout these are great plants for these spots, but if you don't have the green industry growing them and being a partner in this idea of Plant Select, then you won't have the plants to actually promote. So Plant Select is a plant introductory program where we trial our plants from 3 to 5 years. Basically, all the perennials are trialed for at least 3 years, and then the woody plants are trialed for about 5 or more years. We used to have 2 locations of trials, one here at CSU until they put a ridiculous football stadium on top of it. And so we don't have the trials up here anymore, but we still do have the trials down at Chatfield. And you're welcome to join the evaluations if you're a member or things like that. And we can send that all out. You can go on our website to figure out how to become a member. But the first thing you should do is at least sign up for our newsletter. But in a nutshell, Plant Select is plant introductory program from promoting plants that are suitable for the Intermountain region, this arid, dry, multi-freeze-thaw winter situation that we have, and provide successful plants that are eco-friendly, not weeds, and beautiful.
Absolutely. And you know what? I would almost say to you that Plant Select can even go further than out here, because look at what's happening across the United States. And how much, drought and water conservation and all of that. And there's certainly, to all of the plants that you have on your list, there are different species that could be, tested and included for the East Coast as well. And I don't know that's the job that you want to do, because I know you have other things on your plate, but it certainly is amazing, because people want like the label proven winners that you see all the time. They want plants that are reliable. They want to go in a greenhouse and a nursery and know that that plant's going to work for them.
Right. And that's one of the differences. You know, proven winners is really outside of our environment. They do trials out in Michigan, and they don't necessarily do them in the ground all, and see how hardy they are for and have a group, a committee of people. They are really looking at which ones they want to sell and which ones look good, great in a pot. But you know what? Proven Winners is sort of a partner of Plant Select, because we have plants that we are actually exclusively licensing to them. And one of the first one is Lanicera reticulata. That That used to be a very hard plant to find. That's Kinsley's Ghost Honeysuckle. It's a native plant to the Midwest. Such a beautiful plant. Scott Scotobo kind of brought it to the program. And I can't believe that people out in Missouri really don't even know that plant. But Proven Winners approached Plant Select about 3 years ago and said, we really love this plant and we want to market it. We want exclusive licensing rights to grow it. And we did that. And that plant is going to be pushed across the nation and it'll be widely available. It's such great native, habitat friendly, water wise plant. It's amazing. But
I have it in my yard.
Oh, good, 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 good. Yeah. So Plant Select is growing outside of its realms, because we do get a lot of water wise inquiries from other places that, Missouri, for example, they're like, we're in a drought. And of course, they're still getting like 25 inches of moisture a year. But that's for us, it's like, well, that's still a lot of water for our plants. But, they need a program like Plant Select. And there are a lot of other programs actually out there associated with universities like, I think it's a Texas A&M, the Superstars. And those are usually annuals and things like that, but they don't have the traction that Plant Select has. We are the number one nonprofit plant introductory program in the country.
Well, that's wonderful to hear. Yay. Good, good, because you're doing great things. So tell people about the research you're doing on trees from Texas and Oklahoma, maybe?
Yes, correct. So I'll dive into this story a little bit because it's really dear to my heart. There was a gentleman, he was a linguist professor at CU, and he was a horticulture buff. And he is actually the brother-in-law of Panayoti Kalades. And when Panayoti was growing up, he used to hang around this gentleman named Alan Taylor. And it may be his enthusiasm, Alan's enthusiasm for plants is probably what got Panayoti into horticulture. He has a degree in, I think, Asian studies or ling. He also has another linguist degree, I believe. At any rate, he doesn't have necessarily a horticulture degree. That's Panayoti. But Alan Taylor has been doing work since he retired from CU, and he's been doing work collecting genetics from southern parts of Colorado, northern New Mexico, even a little bit further into Nevada, Oklahoma, places where it was very hot, very dry. And he would bring those genetics up to Fort Collins Wholesale Nursery. And he and Scott Scogerbo, and how you used to get things done was you just partner up with people that you're friends. And so Scott Scogerbo is the head propagator at Fort Collins Wholesale Nursery. And he used to grow out all these plants. And he would grow them out and sell them for Arbor Day trees for the cities. A lot of cities would buy these little seedlings to give out to their fifth graders every year. But what the agreement was with Alan was that Alan used to be able to come in and make selections on these plants. And then he would bring them back to his house, do a little more work with them, and then return seed or acorns or things like that to Scott. And then he would end up some pretty fantastic looking Quercus unguladus, which is a wavy leaf oak that's a hybrid between the Quercus gambellii and Turbinella. And there's so many unique leaf shapes and sizes and fall colors to these things that it's a fun plant to work with, if anything. But Alan Taylor had brought a lot of those genetics up, and years ago, Quercus undulata was a potential Plant Select plant, but it became a little bit hard to market because every plant was so different. When you grew them out from acorns, they would all look different. And designers have a problem with that. They can't just specify something that one is going to be tree form, the other is going to be shrub form. It's too unreliable. But Alan Taylor had also partnered with another nursery up in Oregon, who is a licensed propagator of Plant Select. And that nursery is Heritage Seedling and Liners. The gentleman up there who did own it in the past, he's since retired. His name is Mark Krautman, and very heavily involved with oaks. Anyhow, he had started the idea. Both of them had kind of got this idea like, we need to make a program for these sort of Southwest style oaks and that are, does, you know, really adapt to hot, dry areas. And what happens with most people who are passionate about plants is they keep them around and they forget about having to make the money they need to actually make their business work. And I love those people. It works against them a little bit, but I got a call from Heritage Seedling Propagator saying, we need Plant Select. We've got all these plants and we don't know what to do with them, and they're perfect for your area. And I was like, you're right. But I only thought they had 10 of them. I thought they had Lady Luck, Estelle, Dolores River. They had Mancos River. They had a whole bunch of these different named cultivars from Alan Taylor in their stool blocks, and they had grown up sizably enough that they could get a lot of scion off them and actually graft them, because grafting is now something that can be done with oaks fairly easily. Anyway, they had about 10 of them, and they called me up, and they were like, well, I don't know, this is such a long run, you know, it's going to be a long time before we get these trees out to the public. And I was like, no, you have to do this. And so I drove up there and I found out they have about 30 of these selections. So we had them contract grow as many of these trees as we can, and I've been giving them out to demonstration gardens and certain people that can keep an eye on to make sure that we can, and put them into trials so that we can actually make the best selections that are appropriate for here. So, back to your question about, you know, making these selections. If you go on to the website and type in the Maryland climate analog, you will find Maryland's been doing studies on climate change and 60 years out. And you can see what Denver is going to look like, let's say, in 60 years. And it's going to look, I just was on there this morning, and it's not looking too drastic. It's looking like Walden or Walsenburg, but you know, it'll be different. It's still going to be warmer in the winter and warmer in the summer. But Fort Collins actually is going to look a lot more like Texas, like closer to Amarillo, which is interesting. So we need to start looking at what plants are we planting today that are going to be around in 60 years. And those are trees. And so if we're going to have reduce our heat island, save water, and do these things for our kids, we really need to be investigating the all these trees right now. So anyway, that was my story about Alan Taylor Oaks.
So what does the Golden Plains area look like? I hate to ask because we're semi-arid desert now.
Yes. So if I, you know, I did not type in that city, and I'm not at my computer right now to do that. But if you go in there and type in Julesburg, let's say, I don't remember where you're out of, Julesburg or Sterling or somewhere.
Julesburg.
Yeah, take a look, because it could look a lot more deserty, like Amarillo, Texas, or you know, Western Oklahoma. And those are tough climates. And when I think about trees in the future, water is the biggest thing in for plant select, hands down. And I forgot to mention it in our evaluations, but you can find on our website the annual supplemental irrigation that each plant needs, and they're very low. They're very low, and you can calculate these things on your, if you have an overhead spray, like you have a turf grass, just go out there and capture in a catch cup that measures inches per square foot, and just run your zone once, and you'll probably find out you're watering your turf grass 3 times a week for about 20 minutes a time, and it's capturing about a quarter to a third of an inch of water each time. What you need to think about is just turning it off 2 times a week. And then if you're catching a quarter once a week, that's only 1 inch per month. Your growing season's 3 to 4 months, you know, for the most part, but with very xeric plants, you can start to water every other week in the spring. You can back it off quite a bit. And we have a lot of plants that just require 3 inches of water for them to look good. They'll survive on less, but to look good, they might need 3 inches. Then, well, of course, we have a lot of other plants that are zero water, supplemental water after they're established. But back to the water thing, we're facing water scarcity, not only because of possible climate change and how fast our spring runoff melts off the mountains and goes down the rivers, and we don't have enough reservoirs to actually capture all that water to slow it down. Our population here in Colorado is growing such that it is really kind of a problem for our water availability. So even without, if we had the same water now as we do in 60 years, our population is projected to be quite a bit different, so that we won't be able to sustain those things. Now, when we look at trees, in the old days, you used to not have air conditioning out here. You used to plant a big tree on the south side of your house, and you'd open your windows at night and shut them in the daytime, and you can get through summers just fine. Well, nowadays, you can think about putting a big tree by your house, but in 60 years, are you going to have enough water to water it? And the other idea is that your rooftop area may be more valuable to you than the tree to provide air conditioning or to cool off the house. And I say that because, you know, we've had two incidences now where we've had high winds here in Fort Collins, and they have turned off the electricity for a half a day or more. And I'm thinking, you know, if they're going to turn off electricity just in high wind associations, most people are going to want solar somewhere. And the top of their house is going to probably be where it's going to be located. So when you think about planting a tree, maybe you want shorter trees. They offer just as much of the eco services that a large tree does with less water. Anyway, and you may want to put those a little bit further away from your house, but they don't have to go super high above your ridge line on your house. So anyway.
Well, that's kind of what I did at my house. I put a bur oak way in the back, knowing that in many years from now it'll shade that whole area. And then I put a gamble oak closer where it would shade the air conditioning unit.
Yeah.
And so that to me was the smartest thing to do, thinking ahead of what you just said, you know, needing solar. I think that as it gets hotter in the summers and stays that way into the fall, people are really going to use their air conditioning. And then is it going to be enough power to, you know, if the population in Denver grows, how are they going to accommodate that? So using nature by using these plants, to me, is a way a smarter thing to do in the long run.
Right.
Because I was raised in Pennsylvania, and you know, we opened the windows and we had, you know, maples front and back, a tulip tree, and that would, you know, significantly drop the temperature, you know, 15, 20 degrees. And at night, you could just open your windows and there you are.
That's right. So tree canopy across the Front Range needs to be fulfilled. I mean, we're really at, I think I saw the tree canopy was somewhere around 13% in Fort Collins. Well, you know, it varies because old towns, old parts of towns usually have a lot more tree canopy, but it's important that we actually increase more of those. Trees are really part of the infrastructure of any urban or municipality. They're as important as getting your electrical, getting water to your house, getting, they slow down all the water that comes down. They clean the air, they cool off the concrete. We actually need a lot more trees around. We just don't need them so 60 feet tall, you know. They can be 20 feet and be touching at the crowns or the in the canopies, and that works just as well.
Well, I say this all the time. They're part of the hydrology system. Why would you want to do without them? You know, there you take that away and there's a huge piece missing. And it's not going to rain when you do that. So, how are you going to get that back? And so we have to put them back. So, do you have some kind of a number that you would suggest for, you know, cities like smaller cities like Fort Collins or even some of the smaller towns, you know, is 13% enough? It doesn't sound like it is. Should it be, you know, closer to 40% canopy?
Like I said, I wish I was in front of my computer and I'd look where I was just now, but I think it's supposed to be somewhere around 40%. It's
Wow.
supposed to be a lot bigger.
Wow.
And it's a there's so many different aspects of trees, you know, because trees shade out native plants. You know what I mean? Our natives are really for sun. But the infrastructure component is huge. You know, this group of trees that you'll find them on the market later on in a few years here, pretty readily. But they're going under tailor-made oaks is going to be that line of trees. But I'm also passionate about crevice gardens, and crevice gardens are completely opposite of trees. We just installed one here at my office this last fall. We had Kenton Seth, who's the nationally recognized crevice gardener, come out and show a whole bunch of landscapers how to build crevice gardens. And so if you find yourself in Fort Collins, please come by the Horticulture Center on Center Avenue, because we have different stones with different plants and different styles, and it's kind of a showroom of crevice gardens. But the reason that I think crevice gardens are huge is because you have Colorado has a lot of native plants that are small and they need homes. You can't put them into a perennial border. They get grown overgrown, they get shaded out or too much moisture. And so you need places for those as well. And crevice gardens, it's so funny because they offer more benefits than just protecting small plants. One of my favorite plants is thinking of right now is Telasonic's Jonesy Jamesii. I believe that's it. Americana. That's it. That's one of the coolest plants, and that's perfect for a crevice garden. But crevice gardens are water wise. People think that if you use a porous media like sand for them, that you need to water more, but it's actually the opposite. I'll explain that maybe in another later, or if you ask me later.
Sure.
But they're also firewise. And we just had a webinar last night on firewise plants. And I was so tired in the 80s and 90s, you know, the houses were going in and they just had a 3 foot border around every house that was just gravel. It was, you know, weed bearer cloth, gravel. And they're like, oh, we're trying to protect the foundation from water. I was like, oh man, it's so ugly. It's so terrible. But crevice gardens fit nicely in there. You know, you water a lot less. So it's not the turf up against the foundation and what they used to do in the 70s. And it's a fantastic option for a beautiful, fun, artistic little surprises all through the summer when they bloom, and you can just fill it up. And it's so easy to weed because it's just pulling basically, you know, plants out of sand if you don't want them there. You know, and then I realized the other day when I was coming to the office late, it was dark, and I looked at the crevice garden I have out front, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is actually a great security garden because there's not a burglar in the world that would want to run over that. My dogs don't even go in it. You know, they walk around it because they don't like the footing. So anyway.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, it was a few years I was into this job, and Denver Botanic Gardens had a display on crevice gardens. And we've taken our some of our staff for team building and master gardeners, and we were doing this tour, and I saw those, and I did a post way back when on my blog, and so I'll do another one on my Facebook page. I absolutely love those gardens. I think it's ingenious, and I helped do a lot of work on the Firewise fact sheet that was redone a couple of years ago, and we really got serious about taking a lot of plants off the list because we want it to be the safest it can be for people, especially in close proximity. You know, not everybody has an acre of ground around their house. That's gone. I mean, you know, unless you live out here and then you're out in the open in the wind and all the other elements, so you go in the opposite direction. I think they're fabulous, and thanks for mentioning those, because you know I think it's a great idea to use them, you know, up in that 3 to 5 foot space. Because I think, you know, gravel, well, gee, what does that do? I mean, it heats the house, right? You know, you don't need that. You need something else that works well with it. And it's a great solution for people that can't have those bigger trees in their yard.
Right. They can have a diverse amount of plants. And the other thing that was a surprise when I did my COVID project installing a crevice garden at my house is I got all the media in there and I got my rocks. And within about 2.5 days, I saw a bunch of little holes all over the place. And insects had already started to move into that. So if we think about native bees in Colorado, they're mostly solitary and they're burrowing and they're the ones moving in there. When we have wood mulch and we have weed barrier cloth and we have, all these other things, they don't have habitat to live in. So this is one of those really great gardens that actually supports native bees. And we have Lisa Mason was telling me over 1,000 native bees identified in Colorado. And in Larimer County, I believe there's 463. So at least last count. That Plant Select actually supported Lisa Mason's work doing pollinator studies back many years ago, 2017, 18, 19.
She's been on the podcast and talked about that. Everybody's familiar with the honeybee, but there's a lot more in this country than that. I'm so glad to hear that. And we really have to, as individuals, take part in bringing back those things into, because putting a crevice garden, putting a smaller tree in your yard, it changes the whole ecosystem. It's what we have to do, garden to garden.
Right. Speaking on that note, that at the Pollinator Summit this fall, I did not attend that meeting, but there was a gentleman there who I thought was an extension agent, and I spoke with him, and now I can't remember his name. He's up west of Denver, in Evergreen or somewhere around there. But he gave a talk, and he featured the crevice garden out front of our office, and I had planted some of Alan Taylor oak trees there. And he applauded the planning of putting those trees in sort of and around the, not on the south side of the crevice garden, but on the north side of the crevice garden as part of the pollinator component to crevice gardens. And I didn't know this. I mean, I wasn't there, and my friends were texting me like, you got to talk to this person. And so I called him, and he was so wonderful. And he said, I think his name was Derek. And he said that I asked him why he suggested the trees. And he says that, people need to think more about pollinators, not just the flowers, but the structure and the habitat that they offer. And I said, really, why the trees? And he's like, well, that's a whole nother layer of pollinator canopy that should be around pollinator gardens because that's where they live as larvae and then they fall down and things like that. And also because when they fly around, just like people, we have landmarks and we recognize what things are around those landmarks. And so when insects are flying around, they see that tree, they know at the base of those trees, there's a bunch of plants that are potentially flowering and have offering pollen or whatever they're looking for, nectar. Anyway, so I was just like, oh my gosh, this is so much bigger, and we're learning so much more, at a rapid rate here as we move into the future.
Oh, absolutely. And when I was going to school, we had a landscape architect because he was teaching landscape design to us. And he said, if you want to replicate something and you want to understand how nature works, go out into the field, go out into the forest and watch and see what grows next to each other. And see how those relationships interact. And I've done that ever since then. And it's just, you bring back so much more, knowledge to your own landscape that's it's gonna benefit everybody. And yes, there are layers that we need to think. We can't think single-mindedly about one single thing in the garden because everything is connected. There's a relationship somehow to everything else, whether we understand it or see it, but it exists.
When I drive down the street, I'm always asking myself, why does it look like this? Why does it look tree lawn, tree lawn, tree lawn? And it's just so much lack of imagination and so unfulfilling for the environment. But on the contrary, I'm always asking myself, what would I like to see? What would I like to see? What would be appealing? What would prevent, like loss of property value. There's some places you drive by and you're like, I can't tell if it's weeds or if it's a wildscape or what it is, but I know a lot of neighbors are like, that's not what I'm used to. So Jim Borland would be an example. I don't know if people know Jim Borland, but he used to be the head propagator at Denver Botanic Gardens way back in the 80s, I believe. But he lives in Lakewood, Colorado, and he hasn't watered his house, his yard in like 40 years. And it's full of native plants, and it's huge and it's beautiful in my mind. And it's funny because he has told me that people down the street would walk up to his house and tell him, well, your landscape cost me about 20 grand when I sold my house. And it's so crazy because we need to change our minds about what is really beautiful and what is sustainable and what really is property value, including
Well,
should the environment.
I've talked about this on other podcasts, but when I first moved into the house that I'm in, there was Kentucky bluegrass in the front medians, and they're big medians. And I said, I'm not doing this. I'm not mowing this, and I'm not watering this. And I ripped out the grass. And so now people go by, they come by to see what's blooming all the time. And so other people in town in Julesburg have contacted me and said, Linda, how did you do that? And so they're worried now about their water and, about how they're treating the environment. And so I just continue to rip out the grass, and I have a big garden in the back now. I'm just slowly ripping out stuff because I just want to turn it back into what is so native, what is so important to us to support the rest of the ecosystem,
Right. And as we move into the future, I think the best approach is diversity and with water-wise plants. And it's hard to say anymore. I just was thinking about, we also had a webinar with Scott Skogerbo talking about assisted plant migration. And he was talking about some of these Alan Taylor oaks and how, if our climate looks so much more like Texas or Oklahoma in the future, those plants that are living there now may not survive, as you know what I mean, being native there and having the resources that are there now. If those disappear and they are now facing even higher drought from further south than them, we need to move some of those plants up north to here. And I'm just thinking, like the New Mexican privet, I used to plant that all over. I don't even know why anybody would plant any other privet there. The European ligustrum. That's crazy. And the New Mexican privet's so beautiful. But on the other hand, it's not native actually right here in Fort Collins. I think there was one place in a canyon that was native too. But it's part of preparing, for bringing that species up, having it around for its next life cycle, and saving water.
So, what are your thoughts about, if we really increase our tree canopy and we do more of this native gardening and native grasses, if we have to have a portion of a lawn for those who enjoy that and need it, do you see that sort of mitigating some of this climate change at all?
Oh, I do. Well, I'm not the expert on how much it would mitigate, but it is definitely going to help. And I think it would help enough to say that significantly that it'll help. Because if you can reduce the temperature in urban areas, you'll reduce your AC use. You reduce the resources that are needed to slow down water when you get heavy rainfalls and everything just washes into the river, or cleaning up all the fertilizer that ends up in the streams and things like that. And the amount of health care that just happens naturally when you have plants around. Your mental health is huge. I think that's not necessarily for climate change, but I just see all those resources being a little bit alleviated when we have more plants. And it's just that we don't, people, we're still new to all this change. As a human race, it's just happening so fast, and we're building things that are not, urban settings are not native, and the only thing we have tied to our DNA are from where we came years and years and years ago. So, the plants that we've been traditionally planting here in Colorado are really meant for Ohio or for Europe, or that's where they all came from. And it's like toothpaste is the way I look at it. It's like if you start out as Colgate, if you're raised with Colgate, that's what you use, unless your wife tells you you got to use Crest because she was from a Crest family. It's kind of like that with plants. So
Well, I tell people, plants are part of us. They're part of our global family. And so if we go off the planet, they're still going to be here, and we need to go back to integrating them and respecting that and, doing the best that we can, because blindly just removing ecosystems to develop a new housing, place for people, condos or whatever it isn't going to do that without also allowing those homeowners the ability to have that native area around them.
right. Well, I as director, in Plant Select is a plant introductory program, but in my heart, I look at it as a conservation effort. And it's hard to see, I think, sometimes from the outside, and sometimes even the board doesn't see it like that. They see it as like this is, sustainability, and we need to do more studies. And the money that Plant Select actually gets is from the small portion of royalties on each plant that's sold, which is an average of 9 cents per plant. And then that money goes back into more trials and studies here at CSU. The studies here at CSU now, since the trials are gone, have gone back into propagation studies to see how better, how to, native plants don't like to be necessarily in production run facilities. They don't like the media, they don't like the watering, they don't, it's just a different environment, and that's why you don't find them on the market so much. Well, Plant Select puts money back into CSU to work with those plants to see how they can be propagated more easily, what their comfort levels are, and that kind of stuff. And then so we can share that with our licensed propagators so that there are more of them out there in the market. That's kind of the
Well,
whole.
in native plants, I mean, it goes back to their genetics where they originated, and they're not going to do well in a container for a long period of time on in a nursery or in a greenhouse. It just doesn't work that way. It's not who they are, in the DNA level.
Right. They weren't meant for peat.
No.
That's for sure.
And
Not here.
peat is a whole other topic.
Yes,
And
it
I'm
is.
so glad the industry is beginning to think about removing peat.
Yes.
And the other issue is what the pot is, plastics.
Believe you me, this wears on me a lot, and I've been working on something for a couple of years now that I think will curb that by a lot, but I'm not there to be able to talk about it yet.
That's okay. I won't spoil that secret.
Yeah, but it
Well, good for
does, and
you.
everybody's on board. Everybody in the industry is on board, but nobody knows how to tackle it. And I think, there's a way to tackle it. And Europe is probably 20 years ahead of the United States on all this stuff. And then Canada is actually 10 years ahead, and we're the last in all of our growing technologies. I think it's in Europe. I don't think they're going to be able to put plants in plastic to sell them anymore. I think it's like in 5 years or something, 5 to 10 years. It's coming up fast. And we'll end up getting that, 10 years, 15 years down the way, maybe, unless we have some setbacks here over the next 4 years, but we'll
Wow.
see.
Well,
Any.
I hope so. So, crevice gardens, can you give people an idea of maybe three or four plants that you would recommend for somebody if they're interested in building a crevice garden?
You bet. So Moroccan pincushion is one of my favorites. That is just a mat, and it's evergreen all through the winter. So Colorado, we forget that we actually have some mild winters, and when the snow melts, there's a lot of sun on the ground. And penstemons, oh my gosh, Penstemon cespitosa wagon wheel or Penstemon xylus, they love that stuff. And they fill in the cracks. They look very natural. They're absolutely gorgeous. Then we also have another one that's promoted this year, which is the Solidago Multi Errata Yada. Sounds like Rosanna Anna Dana for those who remember that. But anyway, it's the Rocky Mountain Solidago that blooms in the spring. It doesn't self-sow around, and it's only about 12 inches tall. It's beautiful yellow flowering. It's a keystone plant for our area. According to Doug Tallamy and the Wildlife Federation. So it's an important one. There's another one that we have out called Rambler Fleabane. It's another Rocky Mountain high elevation kind of plant. It looks fantastic in crevice gardens, and it grows, 10 inches tall, and it blooms in the spring. It has, it's a composite with pinkish petals with a yellow center. Absolutely gorgeous, perfect for native pollinators. When you think about crevice gardens, and if you come up here, we had one of our members named well, Emmanuel Didier. He's a landscape architect, and he wanted hands-on experience, and he's very creative. He's from France. He's an amazing person. He's very, very on top of conservation and things like that. And he came out and did a crevice garden that was sort of shaped like a small city. And it's not necessarily replicating crevices in the mountains. It was just a completely artistic thing. It looks like somebody dropped a rock on a piece of ice and it shattered the ice. And that's how the crevices fan out from a center point. And then he has stood up a whole bunch of rocks on one side that looks like buildings in a miniature. And it's so creative. And I don't want to pigeonhole crevice gardens as any one thing. They're still being discovered. I mean, part of our crevice garden too was recycled concrete, or what you also call urbanite. I actually got the concrete from the Nutrien building. They're doing construction. Instead of throwing it away in the landfill, we took it, and it's actually one of the most beautiful gardens we have out here. So, but so those plants, any creepy crawlers, Anthonarias, Liatris, Ligostylus, those are great ones. There's so much creativity in them, and you can have some that, do very well at the top, and then you of a crevice garden. So crevice gardens, typically you don't want to go more than one third high, as wide as it is, and otherwise it just becomes too much of a stretch for the plants and the water that's in that berm. It makes it too complicated. So there's a limit to those things, but then you have your size of plants, where on the outside you could have Pentstemon rostiflorus further away that gets a little bit bigger, and they get a little bit wider. They can get 18 inches wide and as tall, and fantastic plant, but you don't necessarily want that covering up all the stonework that you did. And the other thing with those crevice gardens is they're so easy to disassemble and put back together. I think they're perfect for medians because, if the cars crash into them, you can put them back together really quickly, and it slows down the crash, because it's just basically a big sand bed, like a runaway truck stop, or a runaway truck ramp.
Well, some of these plants that you've mentioned, like the Moroccan pincushion, they are so hugely popular. I mean, you go in to purchase them and they're gone.
I know. I know. They're a slow growing one, but it's such a great plant. They're just so beautifully textured, and then they put up, it's like a brooch. Their flower is just a pale sort of a violet, and it looks like a brooch. You know what I mean? That you'd wear, and it just gets covered. Oh, such a fantastic plant! I absolutely love that plant.
Well, is there anything else you would like to add before we go?
Has it been an hour?
Well,
Or close
it's
enough?
close enough, close enough.
Well, good. Well, the only other thing is I would say, get involved. Plant select is, we live in the steppe here, high, short grass prairie. And so we all are responsible for planting smarter. And plant select is trying to lead a charge on that. And I think we're doing a very good job. Sign up for our newsletter. There's lots of great information in there. We are having our annual conference on June 26th down at Denver Botanic Gardens. Tickets sell out fairly quickly. We let our members know first. And We have a cap of about 250 people that we can allow in, where I think we're outgrowing the facility. But we are going to have some wonderful speakers from Boise, Idaho, and Red Buttes Botanic Gardens, and Sonia Anderson and Amy Yarger from the Butterfly Pavilion, speaking on pollinators. It's always a great day and a great network of people. It's a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
So
Been there many times, always enjoy it. Yes. Yes.
good.
Well, thank you, Ross, for joining me.
Yes, my pleasure. It's fun to sit down and talk with you, Linda. Finally.
And if you have any other new research you want to talk about, just let me know and we'll have you back on. And I think this is important for allowing people to know what's happening and what they should be aware of.
I will reach out this spring if things go my way.
Okay, cool. And thank you to the audience for listening. Tune in next time when we get to the heart of the matter on another horticultural topic.